Doors are located at 512 South Neal Street in Champaign. Their number is 217-352-3333 and 1907 West Springfield Avenue. Their number is 217-352-9992. You can order online at jetspizza.com. Disability Beat is also sponsored in part by attorney Baku Patel of Patel Law, who practices Social Security disability law and represents those who have been denied benefits. There are no fees unless Patel Law wins your case. You can contact Patel Law at 217-384-1111 for a free consultation to discuss your Social Security disability case. Patel Law is located at 108 West University Avenue in Urbana with offices in Danville and Decatur. For more information, visit patellawteam.com or call 217-384-1111. And now stay tuned for Disability Beat.
My name is Kayla Waters from University of Illinois Extension, and you're listening to Disability Beat on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, community radio for East Central Illinois.
This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with attorney Baku Patel, who is also one of our underwriters here on Disability Beat, and he will be talking about the ins and outs of Social Security disability. But first, disability news for the week of February 15th, 2016, from the Disability Scoop. President Barack Obama's $4.1 trillion budget includes a bump in funds for special education programs serving young kids, but spending on school-aged children would largely remain flat. The budget, released last week, calls for $80 million in added federal funding next year for early intervention and preschool services for children with disabilities. Included within the increase is $15 million earmarked for demonstration programs designed to expand early screening, referral, and intervention services for infants and toddlers, end quote. Meanwhile, however, grants to states under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act would stay level at about $11.9 billion. The spending proposal for the 2017 fiscal year, which begins October 1st, marks Obama's last in office. It is unlikely to be approved as is by Congress, but offers an outline of the president's priorities. Obama wrote in the proposal, quote, "The budget is a roadmap to a future that embodies America's values and aspirations, a future of opportunity and security for all of our families, a rising standard of living, and a sustainable, peaceful planet for our kids," end quote. Beyond education, the president's plan includes an additional $983,000 for disability-related efforts at the U.S. Department of Justice. The extra funds would ensure the nation's police are properly trained to interact with children and people with disabilities and to support the enforcement, technical assistance, and the issuance of guidance and regulations related to the Americans with Disabilities Act, the Justice Department said. There is also an increase of $10 million for home and community-based services, and the plan includes provisions expanding and simplifying eligibility to encourage more states to provide home and community-based services in their Medicaid programs, according to budget documents. What's more, Obama's proposal includes $3.4 billion for vocational rehabilitation programs across the country and $154 million to continue housing assistance for more than 27,000 low-income households with people who have disabilities. In a deal with the U.S. Department of Justice, Greyhound will compensate passengers with disabilities and pay a fine to settle allegations that it repeatedly violated the Americans with Disabilities Act. The Justice Department said last week that Greyhound Lines Incorporated will pay $300,000 to certain travelers identified by the federal agency, and the company will hire a claims administrator to compensate an unlimited number of others who face disability discrimination in interactions with the bus service. The agreement comes in response to a Justice Department complaint alleging that Greyhound failed to maintain lifts and other accessibility features on its buses, did not assist passengers with disabilities with getting on and off buses, and did not allow individuals using wheelchairs to make travel reservations online. Said Vanita Gupta, head of the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division, quote, "The ADA guarantees people with disabilities equal access to transportation services so that they can travel freely and enjoy autonomy. This agreement marks a major step toward fulfilling the promise of the ADA, and we applaud Greyhound for entering the consent decree," end quote. The deal, which must still be approved by a judge, calls for Greyhound to pay a civil penalty of $75,000 and improve its online booking system in addition to compensating passengers. The company has also agreed to make annual in-person ADA training mandatory for all employees and contractors who interact with the public. A documentary focusing on the coming-of-age story of a boy on the spectrum is headed to theaters later this year after picking up an award at the acclaimed Sundance Film Festival. The film Life Animated is based on the best-selling book of the same name written by Pulitzer Prize winner Ron Suskind about his son Owen, who has autism. Owen Suskind stopped speaking at the age of 3 and learned to reconnect with language and relate to the world around him through Disney animation. Life Animated premiered in January at the Sundance Film Festival, where it won the directing award in the U.S. documentary competition. The film weaves video of Owen's life with sequences from Disney classics and original animation based on Owen's drawings to tell his story. Said Julie Goldman, a producer of the documentary, quote, "We are so excited for audiences to meet and connect with Owen Suskind and the Suskind family. The remarkable screenings at Sundance were just the start. We anticipate an extraordinary journey ahead with the Suskinds, A&E Indie Films, and The Orchard, who are committed to bringing this film to the widest possible audience," end quote. And finally, Brian Britz's 2-year-old daughter cannot sit in a regular shopping cart because of health issues and developmental delays. That means shopping is a family affair, with one parent pushing the medical stroller while the other pushes the shopping cart. To alleviate the difficulties that parents like his face, Target said that by March 15th, the majority of stores will have at least one Caroline's cart, and many will have more depending on guest needs. The smallest Target stores that don't have full-size shopping carts will not carry Caroline's cart. Now, Caroline's cart looks like a traditional shopping cart, but with a large open seat that has a 5-point harness that faces the shopper. It eliminates the task of simultaneously pushing a wheelchair or stroller and a cart. Said Brintz, quote, "These carts will be amazing because we'll only need the cart instead of both a stroller and a cart. This will make it more efficient." Target started testing the carts in select stores last year after a Target employee with a child who has special needs suggested the idea. According to Juan Garalaga, Senior Vice President of Store Operations, quote, "Caroline's cart can be a game changer for families, and we're excited to offer this for our guests across the country. Target is always looking for new ways to make guests feel welcome in our stores and give them a more comfortable shopping experience," end quote. Target is one of several retailers that have tested or introduced the carts. It was invented by Alabama parents Drew Ann and David Long after they realized their daughter Caroline, who has special needs, would outgrow the regular shopping cart. The special cart is now available at retailers in 47 states and in Canada. And that's the news for this week.
This
You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. I'm Vicki Nicewander, joined today by my guest in the studio, Baku Patel, who is an attorney here in Urbana, also with offices in Danville and Decatur, as I understand. So welcome to the program, Baku.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming in and being a part of this. I've been trying to connect with you for a while, so I'm really glad that you were able to come in. We have never covered anything about disability law and disability, what the government offers as far as disability support for people. So introduce yourself a little bit and tell us about what you're doing.
Okay. Well, my name is Baku Patel. My law firm is Patel Law. As you indicated, we have an office here in Urbana, along with an office in Danville and Decatur.
Mm-hmm.
Myself, along with attorneys and staff, represent clients in other areas, including criminal defense, personal injury, those injured in auto accidents, and of course, Social Security disability law.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about the Social Security disability benefits that people could access, and who exactly are the people who are eligible for those?
Well, it's anyone who is unable to work. So if you've been working and no longer can work, or have never been able to establish work because of an impairment, whether it's physical or mental disability, then there's a system in which you basically apply for Social Security benefits. It is in advance of attaining the retirement age of 62 plus, where you would be entitled to Social Security benefits.
Mm-hmm.
This is basically getting it earlier in life by proving to the government, I have these impairments, I have these disabilities, and they just prevent me from maintaining employment.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's an application process, and it's a pretty lengthy system, but one needs to stick with it in order to establish their benefits and get their rights.
So this is not something that somebody could just pick up the forms and fill it out and do it easily and submit it themselves. It really is better to use professional assistance to make that happen, correct?
Certainly. In the initial step, Social Security helps the individual apply for the first application. Just initial application. They do it either online, if one has access to online access to the Disability Social Security Administration website, or they can make an appointment, go in physically, and get an application on file.
Mm-hmm.
So they first do the application. Now, statistically, nationally, less than a third are approved. So over two-thirds are denied. There's various reasons for that. It could be budgetary. Sometimes it could be because they don't, at the initial time they're applying, don't get all of the information that are necessary to get an approval.
Mm-hmm.
They leave out a medical record or a doctor's records are not submitted to the Social Security Administration. They make a decision without those benefits of having the person's entire medical file ready. And so they deny. After you receive a denial, because as I said, vast, vast majority will get that denial, and no one should be surprised by it. They should expect it. Don't give up. They give the person 60 days, not very long. By the time you get the letter and you decide what you want to do and you're trying to figure out what happened, 60 days could go by pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
That is where within the body of the letter, Social Security will actually advise you that you can get an attorney. That next step is called reconsideration, where you are asking the local office, whether it's here in Champaign County or Vermilion County or Macon County, you made a mistake. You should have approved me earlier. And here's why you made a mistake. That's where we are better off helping the disability applicant perfect their case.
Mm-hmm.
Now, even at that stage, they deny vast majority because you're asking the same office to think about it again after 60 days. It's unlikely they're going to think that they made some mistake within that 60 days. And statistically, nationally, vast majority are rejected.
Mm-hmm.
Your next step, and I'm there right there because I'll get all the notices, is to apply for a hearing in front of an administrative law judge. Now we're in front of a judge. And my experience has been majority of those judges, Social Security judges, if you go in unrepresented, will want you to get an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
We don't charge any fees. There are nothing unless we win the case, and we only get a percentage of the back benefits, only 25% of the back benefits. So there's really no loss, no cost to the person to get an attorney. The system's made that way.
So not the benefits going forward.
No, not at all. Just whatever I could prove to Social Security that you should have been getting from the beginning, that portion. And it's capped at 25%, no more than $6,000. So it's really capped low. It's meant for no one to take advantage of the disabled. But it also allows them access to lawyers because they're not working. They don't have money to hire an attorney on an hourly or a flat fee basis.
Right.
So at the hearing in front of the judge, we will get all your medical records. We'll make sure everything's updated. We'll be in communication with your primary treating physicians to see if they're willing to step up and help you establish that you have an impairment that prevents you from working. And there's a way we do that, to work with the doctor to get that letter perfected, the medical statement.
Mm-hmm.
We'll submit all of it for you. We'll appear at the hearing with you. We'll make all the arguments on your behalf. Now, at that stage, statistically, the win rate is substantially higher. Because now you've made a perfect case to move forward and get the benefits the person deserves.
Mm-hmm. So appearing before the judge, as scary as that sounds, actually is the more effective way.
Yes, that is statistically, it is the way to get your approval done. You're now finally in front of somebody. Everything else is, like you indicated earlier, just filling out forms, filling out papers, and submitting them online or dropping them in the mail. And somebody's looking at it. You don't even know who's doing it.
Some clerk on a power trip says, no, we're not going to pay for
it. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But when we finally get to a judge, it's right there. We're in front of a judge. There's no opposing counsel from Social Security.
Really?
It's just myself along with my client, the applicant. We'll have some family members come and testify as to the tribulations and troubles that person has on a daily basis. We'll present documents and we'll make our arguments, both in writing before we go and verbally on the record.
So what you're saying is, if you really push it, you have a much better chance of being awarded some benefits down the road. But if you give up early on, then you're kind of...
My personal belief is I think Social Security wants people to give up, because after you do that initial application, they give you 60 days to do what's called that reconsideration. Mm-hmm. Please reconsider what you just did. When you get denied that, you only have 60 days to go and ask for a hearing in front of a judge. So I think they give you such a small window, in my view. Within 60 days, you got to go and find an attorney and get everything ready to go and get all the forms filled out. So when you get an attorney, we have systems in place. We have all of it on our computer. We have all the forms ready to go. We just need to get some information from the client, and we could spit those out and get them on file online right when they're sitting in my office. So within an half hour and a half to 2 hours, it's all done, and they don't have the headache to deal with it.
So are there cases out there, is there a particular type of disability when somebody comes in your office, you can say, that's a slam dunk, you're gonna get disability benefits for that, as opposed to somebody who comes in that a type of disability maybe that you struggle with?
Right. Unfortunately, I've learned something in almost 25 years of practice. Nothing's quite slam dunk.
Oh, you don't
dunk.
Look that old.
Yeah. Good. Thank you. Nothing seems to be slam dunk. But I can tell you, as you grow older, your case is easier. So if someone's in their 20s, the standard and proof of whether you are disabled and unable to work for the rest of your life obviously is harder than it is for someone who's in their 50s and above. When they're over 50, the law and the way Social Security's regulations are written, the burden of proof is lower for those over 50 than those under 50.
I guess that makes sense, but I never really considered that it would work quite that way. I was thinking more in the line of what type of disability does this person have that might qualify or not qualify them.
Well, there are some that are what's called gridded. There are some disabilities that if you meet the right age and you have these certain impairments, that you'll be successful, much greater success rate than others. But there's no such thing as this particular disability you should win, except a couple, one of which is blindness. You wouldn't even be in my office. I mean, once you're able to show a medical record or two regarding your visual impairment, you're going to win without coming to an attorney. What we have won cases involving people with back injuries, leg injuries, who can't stand or walk, who have numbness, mental health issues, those who have inability to follow instructions, or to stay focused, or to stay on task. We have people who have hand issues where they're unable to manipulate items. Mm-hmm. So that makes them unable to work. So there could be a number of different types, hundreds and hundreds of different types of impairments that you could be eligible to get Social Security benefits. The key is the impairment of which you have, or multiple impairments in combination of one another, prevents you from maintaining an 8-hour workday on a full-time basis. And if you're able to establish, I'm going to miss, you know, 3 or more days a month, I'm not going to be able to perform at task with my coworkers on a more than 6 out of 8 hour day workday schedule. I'm going to need to take periodic breaks because of my injuries or my mental health issues or my physical problems. Those are some evidentiary bases of which you cannot work. No job's going to let you just lay down. No job's going to let you walk off and come back at your leisure whenever you feel like you're finally physically fit to come back to work.
Mm-hmm. So if you have a person, say, who has been a construction worker all their life, and they're not able to do the work on the job doing construction because they've got injuries and conditions as a result of that work, or from something else possibly, but the judge might say, or somebody might say, well, they could have a desk job. They could do something, you know, sitting at a desk somewhere, and that would work. Is that realistic for somebody who has been on a job as a construction worker for their whole life to move into something different, completely
that's
different?
That's a great example because it comes up quite often. Now, as I said, when you hit 55 and over, there's a standard where you can't do your past relevant work.
Right.
Or 50 and over as well. That means you can't do those types of jobs you've done or the type of labor that you used to do. So the window closes where you only have to be able to prove I'm unable to do those types of jobs mm-hmm. with that kind of physical requirements. But if you're under 50, 49 and less, then it comes into what you just indicated. The judge will then say, well, you can't do construction. That's heavy labor, heavy manual requirements are part of the job. So you could sit behind a desk and look at a video monitor and for security at a reception desk in an office building. Mm-hmm. You could do that. Our job then is to say, well, listen, we know that they're under 49, so we're already ready for that. That we'll prove to the judge he can't do that job either. He can't sit that long. Mm-hmm. He has extreme pain. He takes medication that actually causes him drowsiness or causes him to have a lack of attention to details. He has to miss more than 3 or more days of work. Mm-hmm. He's going to need multiple breaks during the day to stretch out, walk around. And so those would ban those type of jobs. So there's a method that we would prove to the judge, an argument that we would present. We would hope that their doctor could help us guide us to that. But sometimes we will be able to look in the medical record and make that case ourselves for the person.
So if the individual said, you know, I really would like to have a job. Eventually, I would need to be retrained. I would need to have these accommodations. Would Social Security provide any supports for that individual to get some training, to get a job, or is that not something to do?
Not part of this process. There may be other programs available, mm-hmm. But not part of this process. This process is just straight up that you as the applicant are being the advocate saying, I cannot work.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you cannot work for a period of 12 months. And so you're the advocate saying that I'm unable to work. That's the issue. Now, if you find an employer that's willing to make those accommodations, you wouldn't be applying for these disability benefits.
Mm-hmm.
These are people who have exhausted all means of trying to find a work where someone would do those kind of things,
mm-hmm.
will work around their disability, will work with them with the hours or the breaks, or work with them with equipment or chairs or training. And make those specific accommodations. They've exhausted all those and have come to the realization, I cannot get a job and I cannot maintain full-time employment. I need these disability benefits.
So this is not something that people run to your office the minute they twist their ankle and say, I want to apply to get funding for my disability.
No.
They really do have this extended chronic condition that they've just not been able to work.
Vast majority of my clients have attempted work. They've mm-hmm. all attempted some type of work. And mostly it isn't that laborious, hard labor. It could be any type of job. Just because of their disabilities, they have been unable to work. Many have been fired over and over again and realize they can't do it. Sometimes, and actually quite a bit of times, sometimes the doctor themselves tell the patient, you need to apply for these disability benefits. You're not going to be able to to work with these conditions.
I've heard there a perception out there that there are people, and I think it's mainly politicians who say people get on the disability rolls so that they don't have to work. And so the perception is that they are somehow sitting at home collecting these checks and getting rich. How realistic is that?
Well, those I've represented over the past many, many years, and I've done hundreds and hundreds of hearings and met hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of disability clients over the last many years. I haven't seen that level of fraud, I guess mm-hmm. would be the best way to say it. Does it exist? Of course, any system, whether it's workers' compensation, whether it's Social Security disability, any kind of system, there's going to be some fraud involved. That's just a part of the business. And it is up to the government to try to weed that out. But it's my job to take on cases that I have a belief that they should get disability because mm-hmm. of their conditions. I've met those people. I've reviewed their records. I've seen them in my office struggle to sit in front of me, having to get up in extreme pain. I've seen it myself. So do I think it's rampant? I can't answer that, but at least in my window where I'm practicing and the people I represent, I don't see it to be an issue.
What's the most unusual case you've ever represented? And did they win or lose?
I can't think of one right off the top of my head. You mean the most unusual disability?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if there's anything unusual about any of the disability conditions that come to my office. I haven't seen anything that stands outright. There's a common thread and theme that I see on the mm-hmm. other hand, and it tends to be more musculoskeletal issues like back pain, mm-hmm. knee issues, leg issues, radicular pain that causes numbness into the legs, nerve damage, because as people get older, their discs tend to degenerate. There's some to be nerve root impingement, mm-hmm. and they have those issues. So I see those quite a bit. On the mental health side, bipolar, manic depression, I do see that quite a bit. So those are some of the more common themes versus the more extreme cases.
Yeah. So before we finish up here, I want to give you a chance to give people your contact information that want to go to the website or give you a call or shoot an email, either one.
Well, thank you. The best way to get a hold of my office, if you've been denied Social Security disability and need help appealing it, is calling my office at 217-384-1111. 217-384-1111. And you have access to the internet. You could go on my website at www.patellawteam.com.
Very good. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
It was a pleasure here too. Baku Patel, attorney for Disability Social Security Disability Law. This and other episodes of Disability Beat are podcast on our website at www.disabilitybeat.com or go to Facebook and look for Disability Beat Radio. Please send your comments and show ideas for guests or topics to disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Hope you have a great week. Yeah.